It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Friday. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. And as always on the 101.3 ESPN app, happy Friday, everybody. It felt a little weird today being in here for a full five-day work week. We've gotten so used to four-day work weeks because we had New Year's, we had Christmas Day, we had New Year's Day. So we're in here for a full 5 days, though. Excited, though. I woke up today. I was like, man, I cannot wait to be on the air. All this talk, all week. Titans, Patriots, leading up to the game, key players, matchups to watch, who can do what, and we are finally going to get football tomorrow night. 8:15 is the kickoff from Foxborough. Watch it with us over at McGillicuddy's Five Corners in Essex. We've got a lot going on. Our friends at Love Vermont 802 are going to be there with some giveaways. We've got giveaways. Coors Light and Blue Moon have giveaways. So it's going to be just an absolutely it's going to be a fun environment for us. So you come out and hang with us, and the weather should be pretty decent by that time of night. So weather bad today, bad tomorrow, but it looks good for the night. So look, you're going to be cooped up in the house all weekend. You might as well come out and be with us on Saturday night. Aaron is here, no longer intern Aaron, part-time employee Aaron.
That's
and
right.
Arnie gives him a joke. He says, intern Aaron's here for 3 minutes. Thanks for helping out. Aaron's here because he is getting one last practice run in here, hanging out with me on Champlain Valley Game Night, because you are taking over the production role, the producer role for Sports Saturday tomorrow.
I am. I'm moving up in the world.
Moving up in the world. So, well, Dave Hunter, a lot of you guys have been listening to Sports Saturday, or if you've been listening to this station or this family of stations for a long time, you have known Dave Hunter. Dave Hunter has been of great service to us. He has stepped away from producing the Sports Saturday show with Jeff Paul. So Jeff and Bernie, 10 a.m. to noon every Saturday. So now Jeff, Bernie, and Aaron in that producer's chair. You good? You're ready for tomorrow?
I am ready.
All right. Jeff is ready. Jeff is pumped. He's been talking to me all week. I can't wait. I can't wait to get going and and have Aaron in here. So you guys got a pretty good show tomorrow too. You guys got some big guests tomorrow, right?
We got Ted Ryan, I know, and I think Tom King.
Yeah, Tom King covers the Patriots, and Ted Ryan, who's everything with Vermont hockey, not just UVM hockey, but Vermont hockey. So Sports Saturday, 10 to noon, Jeff and Bernie, and Aaron also. Aaron hanging out with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night. Here's what's coming up on the show today. I owe Dustin Pedroia an apology for now. For now, I owe Dustin Pedroia an apology, and Aaron, I'm going to have you grab a clip for us on that to prove it. We'll play batting practice at 6:20, and Greg Popovich shows why he is an all-time great. We'll get into that at 6:40. But first, this is not the news that Patriot fans want. I think we are at the beginning of the end of Tom Brady, and I don't mean to be doomsday all of a sudden. I'm not trying to be Arnie. I'm not trying to be shock jock guy. They're not going 3-13 next season with Tom Brady. It's not going to happen. But I think it's fair to say, based on statistics and prediction and correlation, we are at the beginning of the end of Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but I don't know that he's MVP caliber year in and year out. And I know people will say, oh, well, hey, eventually with a 40-year-old quarterback, if you guess he's going to slope downhill, eventually you're going to be right. And that's true, too. I'm not trying to take comfort in this, but when you go and look at the numbers, this is pretty amazing. Everybody remembers the year where Peyton Manning was really bad, 2015, his last year. The Broncos won the Super Bowl, but they won it in spite of Peyton Manning. They didn't win it because of Peyton Manning. They won it because of that great defense, and Manning was there, and he really wasn't good for that whole season. And we oftentimes associate the end is near with the beginning of the season. It's easy to point back at Peyton Manning and say, well, it all fell off a cliff in 2015. Well, did it? It didn't. If you go back to 2014, you could see the signs for Peyton Manning then. And people said, oh, he's injured a little bit, and there's some nagging injuries going on, and that's what caused for his slow last quarter of 2014. But if, I promise you, if you look at this, the 2014 seasons for Peyton Manning and Tom Brady look almost identical, and that's not a good thing. Games 1 through 11, I'm just going to go through this. Games 1 through 11, Peyton Manning in 2014 had a 110 passer rating. Weeks 12 through 16, 79. So he went from 110 to 79. That is a 31, you know, point regression for Peyton Manning. Tom Brady this year, games 1 through 11, 112. Weeks 12 through 16, 82. That's a 30. That's a regression of 30 for Tom Brady. So a 31 regression in quarterback and passer rating for Peyton Manning in 2014. 30 for Tom Brady. Looks awfully similar, doesn't it? The touchdown to interception ratio really went downhill for Manning. He went from 4 to 0.8. Brady was unworldly. He went from 9 to 1.2. He dropped off a cliff even compared to what Manning did. Let's move on. Yards per attempt. Weeks 1 through 11, 2014, Peyton Manning went from 8.05, 12-16, 7.5. So that wasn't a huge drop-off. Brady went from 8.27 to 6.95. Last 4 weeks of the season, not throwing the ball deep down the field anymore. Not throwing the ball as far. Manning, we thought Manning's arm was done in 2015. He started showing signs of that in 14, and Brady's has gone way more south than Manning's did. And finally, the last one, this all comes from 538sports.com, by the way. Points added per game, which is a higher level stat that I don't need to explain. Manning dropped off a cliff. Brady's a little bit better at that. But passer rating, touchdown to interception ratio, yards per attempt, and expected points added per game, they've all gone down at almost a lot of it the same rate for Tom Brady this year as Manning did in 2014. Again, I'm not here to tell you that next year Tom Brady is going to look as bad as Peyton Manning did in 2015. It's not going to happen. He is better than that. He is healthier than that. But that said, the signs of Manning's 2015 were there at the end of 2014. I'm telling you, those same signs are there right now for Tom Brady. Aaron, I'm going to have you, I don't need you to play it yet, but in that folder that's in front of you on the computer, there's a clip from Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Just have that ready. I'm going to have you play that in a second. But I've oftentimes, I'm the guy to make excuses for people. I would be the guy that looks at Tom Brady's numbers and said, the regression is because, well, he didn't have James White, and Rex Burkhead didn't play, and Gillis Lee wasn't active, and Hogan was hurt, and Gronk was suspended. All of those, to me, are viable reasons for why Tom Brady has struggled over the last 4 weeks of the season, games 12 through 16. But when you go and compare it to Peyton Manning, I think we're at the beginning of the end. And I think that's pretty clear given the trends that I just gave you. Manning was only 38. Brady's 40. This isn't going to last forever. I do think the Patriots need to win this weekend, and they need to win big to stave off some of these questions. The ESPN article gave a look into the Patriots organization that is not a favorable one. A lot of Patriot fans want to just dismiss it and say, oh, ESPN's out to get us. Or, oh, they'll 13-3, Brady, 13-3. Okay. If nothing is wrong, then you need to come out and prove it. And people will, like me, will say, they got rid of Garoppolo too early. If he was the future, they got rid of Garoppolo too early. And everyone's answer is this, Brady's still the MVP. And this year he is. But if Brady comes out and doesn't look like the MVP, there's going to be trouble in Foxborough. If they lose, imagine the firestorm that is going to come to the Patriot organization for getting rid of Garoppolo, to the organization where we will now wonder, did they let this distraction in? Was the story true? And should they have kept Garoppolo and let Brady walk? All of those are going to be questions Monday morning if the Patriots lose. I happen to think they'll win. I happen to think they'll be convincing, but that doesn't mean that I can't, I'm not blind. I can look at these stats that are right in front of me and show you a direct relationship between Peyton Manning when the end started. And we can now look back and say the end of 2014 was the end. You look at those numbers, and Tom Brady's numbers are going down at the same rate. I'm holding this paper up to our interns. You see these charts? Those stats look that line going downward, trending downwards, it looks pretty much the same for both guys.
Downward lines are never a good sign.
Downward lines that are linear. This is not fluctuating. This is linear. This is going down at a steady rate. This is not a good thing for Patriot fans. We asked Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus yesterday what he's seen from Brady this year, and he answered that on the huddle with us. So give us that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a drop-off from where he was a season ago, but he was still playing, you know, some of the best football we've ever seen or ever graded a season ago. So it's always hard to replicate those sort of results. The one thing we have seen from him that's sort of interesting is that this offense, it looks different than offenses we've seen in years past in terms of he's throwing the ball down the field a lot more than he ever has. He has a lot more completions, 20-plus yards, than he has, you know, since the year 2007 when he was doing it with Randy Moss. So it's sort of evolved with their personnel, not having Julian Edelman underneath. They've evolved into a much deeper passing offense.
So the one thing that I have to disagree with Mike Renner on, and I love Sabermetrics analytics. I love the guys at Fangraphs when it's baseball. I love Pro Football Focus when it's football. He said Brady's throwing the ball deeper than he ever has before. Yeah, he was. Weeks 1 through 11, he started out. Week 1, he threw the ball 8.27 yards per attempt. Since then, he's gone down pretty darn steadily to now he's at 6.95 over the last 4 weeks. He was throwing the ball deeper. He's not anymore. Reasons? Sure. Injury to guys, suspension to Gronk, weather. It's all possible, but it's also possible we're at the beginning of the end for Tom Brady. I don't think that that drop-off is going to come as rapidly as it did for Peyton Manning. I'm not trying to play doomsday guy here, and I'm also not trying to play Patriots hater. I just think that these stats, I think they're telling a story that Tom Brady is at what I think to be the beginning of the end. Doesn't mean they don't win. Doesn't mean they don't win the Super Bowl this year. I just think now Tom Brady's in a position where he's not going to be able to carry the team moving forward. There's going to have to be some people there helping him along the way. The defense is going to have to step up in situations. Some Gostkowski is going to need to make a 57-yard kick to help the cause. You're going to need those bigger play wide receivers. You're going to need guys to be healthy. I think we're in that situation with Tom Brady really going into next season. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I owe Dustin Pedroia an apology. So, Aaron, get me Dustin Pedroia number two ready here. Dustin Pedroia was on WEEI's Rob Bradford's podcast today, and he was talking about Alex Cora being his new manager. And Bradford asked him point blank, hey, what do you make of playing for a guy that you played with? And here was Pedroia's answer.
You know, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's kind of crazy. He's been my closest teammate and friend in baseball, him and Mike Lowell, throughout my whole career. So I talked to him, in 2012, I talked to him 5 or 6 times a week. You know, we've always remained close because of, you know, what he did for me and how I looked up to him and how he helped teach me everything about the game at the big league level. I mean, that was when I got up in the big leagues, that was his job is to make sure that he taught me how to be professional, taught me how to play, taught me how to understand my role with the team at that time. I mean, I can't, you know, whatever he says, I'll do.
I thought Dustin Pedroia was going to be a problem. I really thought Dustin Pedroia was going to be a problem this year. That Red Sox culture last year was an issue. You have good leaders and you have bad leaders, and guys gravitate towards each of them. And David Price last year was a ringleader, and he was a bad one. Dustin Pedroia was moody. He threw his teammates under the bus. He was injured. That never helps. I thought that Dustin Pedroia was going to be a problem this year. Why? Well, Cora comes in, and even though they're buddies, and I knew that, even though they're buddies, you come in, and it's a new guy, analytics, wants to play the game a different way. They're going to use analytics. We're going to use the defensive shift more, all of these things. I didn't know that Pedroia was going to buy in. I did not know that a guy who's been a 10-year veteran, who's an MVP, who's won a batting title, who's won multiple World Series championships, I didn't know that he was going to buy into the new way of thinking, because I don't see Dustin Pedroia being a guy that sits at home and, you know, is studying hit charts. I don't see that. I see him being a guy who says, you know what, I'm struggling. Let's go in the cage and hit 9,000 balls today. Let's go on the field as long as I'm healthy and field 9,000 grounders. That's how I see his attitude. It's old school. It's what's allowed him to be so good and to rack up those stats on his baseball card. That's what's gotten him here. I didn't know that he was going to buy in to a new way of thinking, to a new school coach. That quote right there tells me Dustin Pedroia respects the heck out of Alex Cora. And that quote right there tells me that Dustin Pedroia, if he is around the facility in spring training, if he's able to get to the point where he thinks he can play opening day or near opening day, he's going to be a guy who gets the young guys to buy in to Cora. He's not going to be the divisive factor that I thought maybe he was going to be in that clubhouse. I was really worried that you were going to end up with two groups, the young guys, the Benintendis, Bradleys, Bogarts, Betts, and they were going to love Cora because he was younger, spoke their language. And then you were going to have the older guys, Sale, Kimbrel, Price, Pedroia, the guys who have been there before and had success their own way, that they were going to be pulling one way and Cora was going to be pulling another. But if Pedroia is on the same page as Cora, then right there, I think instantly, the team chemistry, the locker room dynamic, the clubhouse dynamic, I think it instantly improves. Look, it can still go south. We're not at the point yet where Pedroia is injured again and he's hitting 220 and he can't play 162 games and Cora's got to tell him, Dustin, we need you to sit because we've got, you know, we want to give Brock Holt a chance. We're not at that point yet. It could still go south at some point. But for right now, going into spring training, I'm feeling a whole lot better about Dustin Pedroia's attitude, his willingness to adjust, his willingness to learn, and his respect level for his new manager than I was 10 hours ago. I feel much better about it, and I owe Dustin Pedroia an apology. Not that he cares. He hasn't heard my comments, and he doesn't care even if he did. But I owe him an apology. I worried that he might be a problem for Alex Cora. I don't think that right now, at least going into spring training. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, it's time for batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? That's next on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Going up until 7 o'clock today. No live sports tonight on 101.3 ESPN or 960 The Zone. Very odd that we get that. It's only a couple days a year that that happens. Tomorrow, over on 101.3, Stony Brook UVM coverage starts at 1:30. Then we'll have playoff action, Falcons and Eagles, then Titans and Patriots. Over on The Zone, we'll have Bruins and Montreal. Bruins coming out of a nice week off here. Bruins haven't had any action. Intern Logan's pumped about that. He's wearing his Bruins clothing right now here in the studio, so that's 6:30 tomorrow over on 960. For now, though, time to get to the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? Aaron, cue the batting practice music.
Champlain Valley Game Night batting practice.
Plenty to get to here in batting practice today. That seems awfully... There you go. That's the one. You had the wrong level, didn't you?
Wrong server.
Wrong server. Wrong... Don't do that. You don't want to be doing
my
that.
My bad.
All right. Batting practice here. Tons to get to. Let's start with Golic and Wingo. Golic and Wingo today talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers and their struggles. Let's go to Trey Wingo, number one, talking about the Cavs against the Raptors last night.
What makes it even worse if you're the Cavs or a Cavs fan... Serge Ibaka didn't play. Kyle Lowry didn't play.
Yeah.
And they still blew you out by 34. I mean, those are two people that are going to be critical for Toronto going forward in whatever they're going to achieve in the playoffs as well as the rest of the regular season. They weren't even there, and it was still a layup drill for most of the night.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. The Cavs lost that game by 34 points. They've lost 7 of 10. LeBron ripping his teammates and looked like the coaching staff in the huddle. And here's what I'll say about that, because I was ready for that to be a topic that came up today, and we never got to it in the huddle, so I'm going to address it now. LeBron James going off on his teammates in the huddle. How do I feel about that in comparison to Tom Brady going off on Josh McDaniels? I'm not as affected by it as I was by McDaniels, and I don't quite know why. I don't think either are good looks. Brady, I don't like because he, number one, he was going after the coach and he was doing it with foul language. I think dropping the F-bomb at your offensive coordinator is insubordination, and I don't think that's appropriate, and I don't care that you've won as much as Tom Brady has. I don't think that that's a good look. So, what, Brady, why is it okay for LeBron to do it? LeBron's was largely at his teammates, and I don't have to love that, but it doesn't make it inappropriate. When you go at your teammates, people will look and say, oh, he's just being a leader. When you go after your coach, I don't think that's being fiery. I think that's being a punk. I think Brady going after McDaniels and dropping F-bombs at him and saying F you, I think that's a punk move. When LeBron goes at his teammates in the huddle, and he's, you know, you watch the video, he's clearly going at him, you know, he's talking about defense. I don't think that it's a great look, but when it's largely at your teammates, I think it's okay. And it was generally respectful. It was passionate, but he wasn't dropping F-bombs at him, at least from what I could see. I think that's a big difference. Also on Golic and Wingo, Mike Golic talking about Isaiah Thomas and IT struggled yesterday. 2 of 15 from the floor in that loss. Remember when IT scored 17 points in 19 minutes and we thought that, uh-oh, here come the Cavs. Well, this is kind of the game that I anticipated for IT in the opener. It just happened to come a week and a half later. So Golic talking about Isaiah Thomas, number one, Mike Golic.
The bottom line is you have to integrate Isaiah Thomas into this. For Isaiah Thomas, man, it's driving, it's ball handling, and it's scoring. Right. Now, he doesn't do it, in my opinion, as well as Kyrie. I think Kyrie is unbelievable now with the Celtics. But Isaiah is going to take shots. I understand. He's not going to help you much defensively, so he better score, you know, and be able to handle the ball other than LeBron. So I don't know what the agenda is. The agenda is people are going for personal things to up their value for either this team or another team. I don't know. And it didn't seem a whole lot of players knew either.
Isaiah Thomas struggled yesterday. I do think he'll be okay. And I was listening to Colin Cowherd earlier, and I think Colin was right that LeBron takes time adjusting to new guards, you know, Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, guys he's played with in the past. He and D-Wade didn't gel the first time around in Cleveland either. The first year, remember, they started out and they were 500, you know, 6-6 or whatever. And then all of a sudden they get to the finals and they end up losing and they get it right the next 2 years in beating San Antonio a couple of times. So I think that, you know, I think IT will be fine. He's going to get back in the flow of things. This is what I, you know, the opening night adrenaline I thought was kind of, you know, a mirage. I didn't think that was for real. I think by March 1st he'll be back, but I don't expect him to come out and go 18 every night. I know the Cavs would like that, but it doesn't seem logical to me here. So I'm not too worried about Isaiah Thomas. The Cavs, though, have lost 7 of 10. I'm not overly worried about them either. They had lost 6 of 8 at one point, you know, during the season last year. Continuing on here in batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. Let's go to Bryce Butler. This is interesting. Bryce Butler's a wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. How does he feel about his place on the team right now in Dallas?
With Dallas, you know, if the situation has to be right for me to go back, I have to be a starter. If I'm not starting, I'm not going back.
Simple. If I'm not starting, I'm not going back. And Bryce Butler is a guy who I certainly know who he is. I haven't examined his career, but Dez Bryant had more catches and targets and yards this year in a down year where we all said Dez was done than Bryce Butler's had in his entire four-year career leading up to it. So it doesn't mean Bryce Butler doesn't have potential, but if you're looking to ditch Dez Bryant and kick him out of the starting rotation, you know, kick him out of the 1-2 spot, you know, on the depth chart, Bryce Butler is a guy who's coming in with not a lot of experience. So I think Dallas is still going to be good next year, by the way. I like Dak Prescott. I like him a lot. He reminds me of Russell Wilson. That doesn't mean he's as good as Russell Wilson. And yes, I'm biased towards Wilson because I'm a Seahawk fan, but that's not clouding my judgment on this. I think Dak Prescott can win new games, but I do think, like most quarterbacks in this league, he needs good pieces around him. When you take away Ezekiel Elliott for 6 games, I think that's going to affect a guy. When a guy's best offensive lineman and Tyron Smith is hurt, that's going to affect a guy. Okay? Tom Brady seems to be able to play with a skeleton crew. Not every other quarterback can do that. Speaking of Russell Wilson, look at him. You take away Marshawn Lynch, now he's no, I mean, he's still good, but that offense isn't as good because it's not as balanced, and teams know about Russell Wilson. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. You can also tweet at us. Jake in Williston, he tweeted in at me, "This is great, man. Been pointing to these metrics all year. Wish they would have done Favre's great year at 40 to the next 41, 42. He goes, "The end is near." That was in reference to Tom Brady and the comparison to the Peyton Manning end of 2014 to the Tom Brady end here of 2017. Dan Quinn, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, he was on Golic and Wingo today, and he talked about the Falcons' Super Bowl hangover. Do we really believe that they're not thinking about it anymore? Dan Quinn addressed it.
Early in the year, Mike, it was still a story. You know, you kind of go through the offseason, you're getting started, and as a coach, you're ready to see your team get tested because you want to find out, you know, have you learned from some of the scars that you had, you know, through a loss. But then as the season goes on, it really kind of turns and it shifts just into this team. And so this 2017 team, all the stuff they stand for as a group, so it's not a rallying cry anymore. It's just like how hard they can fight just for this game. And that's really where our focus lies.
You know, I believe him. I do believe him. I think that if you get back to the Super Bowl, some of those bad memories are going to come back. I think some of those bad memories have a chance. But I think on the road to the Super Bowl, I think this Falcons team is largely past it. I think they are so focused on, you know, taking care of their business to get back to the Super Bowl that I don't think they're sitting and thinking in the rearview mirror about last year. But again, if they get back to the Super Bowl and you go through media week and it gets brought up 125 times to you, and then you see the big lights and you know the confetti's there and you see the trophy, I think that's going to bring back some horror stories for you. But for right now, I do believe that this Falcons team is over it. I do. It's kind of like, you know, I saw this from someone, you know, you say you're over that ex-boyfriend or girlfriend. Are you really over him? Or then when you see him again, do all those feelings come rushing back? That's kind of what it's like here for the Atlanta Falcons. I do think they're over it. When they see that environment again, then maybe they're not. But I do believe that beyond the early part of the season, there really wasn't a whole lot of thinking about it for those guys in that locker room. Continuing on here in batting practice, Aaron, give me Case Keenum number one. Keenum was talking about Drew Brees and how much he admires him going into this playoff matchup between the Vikings and Saints.
I've just been a big fan of his for a long time. Obviously, being from Texas, another Texas quarterback that's done really well. You know, similar size. I mean, I guess you could, you know, make comparisons there. But just a guy that I really admire, and how he moves you know, the ball down the field and how he operates, what kind of leader he is. I read his book a long time ago, so you know, I think somebody to learn from. I try to watch all the, you know, really good quarterbacks in the offseason and take little things and try to work on my game, you know, implement things that I think work well with, you know, adding to my game.
Have you met Drew? Have you all had conversations about football?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we've gotten to know each other through different things in the past.
Yeah, I'm happy for Case Keenum. Music's over. Batting practice continues on here on Champlain Valley Game Night. I'm happy for Keenum, a guy who did go unheralded and undernoticed in college. Set the NCAA all-time passing yards record over at Houston, playing at Houston. I mean, I think that it was I like seeing guys who come from nowhere. You know, he played for the Rams, and he was buried under Jeff Fisher's offense, and he got a couple of chances here or there, and they got, you know, they didn't want him around anymore because they had Jared Goff, and here he is now. He's the third quarterback in the quarterback triumvirate. That's Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater and Keenum, and now he's here putting up close to an MVP-type season. I think that's pretty cool. Let's get to the Patriots. Aaron, give me Tom Brady number four talking about Bill Belichick.
I think what makes him so great is he's so consistent just in his approach and week to week. I think you get to these points, you know, if you start doing things different, you got to think, man, why weren't we doing those things all year if these were the things that were working? So I think we've done a good job just sticking to what we've kind of done all season. You know, the tough part is you have to – there's a finality to all these games. You know, you gotta earn it if you're going to move on. You got to earn it if you're going to practice again next week. And, you know, we got to go out and play well. We're playing a team that's been playing well, that plays well in all three phases, puts a lot of pressure on you, well coached. So we're going to have to do the same.
Tom Brady talking about Bill Belichick's consistency being what makes him so great. And look, for better or worse, that is what Belichick is. There's no guessing games with him. And as a professional athlete, as an athlete in general, all you can hope for is somebody who's consistent. Is he going to treat you the same from day to day? Is he going to do the same things and come to work the same way? And look, it might wear on you over time. And if Brady's worn out by Belichick after 17 years, look, I would get that. But he is right that consistency is all you can ask for. And speaking of consistency, let's get one more in here. Let's get Bill Belichick here. Giving a classic response. People asked him what it was like to not have Gronk last year in the playoffs, but have him this year. This is classic Belichick.
The biggest difference?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not naive. He obviously adds a lot to your team. But
yeah, well, whatever team you have, that's the team you have. So we have him. That's great. There are other players that we don't have, other players that other teams don't have. So whoever you have, you have. Whoever you don't have, you don't have. You try to put the most competitive team out on the field with the players that you have. It's great to have him part of it. He's a great player. As I said, there are other players that we don't have, and so we don't have them, just like everybody else.
So there's classic Belichick. We're going to play the Titans this week, and it's going to come out all three phases, and Mariota's a really good quarterback, and Henry, you know, runs the ball well. If you want to get Bill Belichick talking, just talk to him about punting. He'll give you like a 7-minute soliloquy on punting. It's pretty impressive. Backup centers, punting, those are the things that Belichick likes to talk about. Otherwise, it's just a whole lot of mumbling. If you want to do the Belichick impression, just mumble slowly into the microphone and, well, you know, Tom's great. He comes to work every day and practices hard and watches a lot of film. And, yeah, so that's pretty much that. And that's how it goes. So Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN. Speaking of Patriots, speaking of Gronk at the end there, speaking of Pats tight ends, how about a former Pats tight end? Not with a happy ending. Aaron Hernandez, this is interesting to me. I'm going to be watching this. I wonder if you guys will too. January 20th, which is not this upcoming Saturday, not tomorrow, but the Saturday following, there is going to be a one-hour special episode of 48 Hours in the CBS program. Will be told by best-selling author James Patterson, who's writing a book on Hernandez. So it's going to chronicle Hernandez's story in 1 hour. I will be watching that one on CBS on January 20th. All right, when we come back, Greg Popovich, he's grumpy. He's like Bill Belichick, but he's got the key to life. And it's pretty interesting that a guy who's been around for 20 years is still finding new ways to amaze us. That's next on Champlain Valley Game Night at 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment on a Friday right here on 101.3 ESPN at Champlain Valley Game Night. We'll get to our football predictions in about 5 or 6 minutes, but it's pretty amazing. Well, first off, Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Doug in Hinesburg, he texts in and he goes, Brady, great impression of Arnie, but an even better impression of Belichick. Now, that's surprising because, number one, I think a lot of people can do Belichick. I don't think it's all that difficult. But I thought my one of Arnie was pretty good. Ah, good afternoon, everybody. I thought that, I mean, that's what.
Is he here? Did he come back?
Or where he's like, oh, my wife. They're kicking. Even the dogs won't eat it. We got to go to RJ's for... Ow, ow, ow.
It's uncanny.
Ow, ow. $1.49 sliders. $1.49 sliders. We got to go. I thought, like, I've tried... It hurts my voice, so I can only do it in small shifts, but the Arnie one is the one that I've tried to do the best. Belichick, I just thought was, well, you know, I just do this and talk, and they're all going to win all three phases, and, you know, Titans are a good team. Mariota... good quarterback college, good quarterback in the pros. Henry, Heisman Trophy winner. This is gonna be a good game. And yep, there's that. So I don't really know how to answer any other way. So I don't think it's all that difficult, though. Can you do a Belichick?
I mean, I think all you need to do a Belichick is sound like you just lost your childhood pet.
Can
like,
you do it?
Well, we're moving on to Cincinnati.
That's Aaron again. He's in here today hanging out with us until 7. He's going to be on the board tomorrow producing the new producer of Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul. And they'll talk about the Pats game with Tom King. And they'll also be talking some local hockey with Ted Ryan. Big weekend for UVM doubleheader against UMass. Intern Logan, not. Are you going to be at both of those games? Maybe, he says. Does that mean you couldn't get tickets or something? Because I thought you were like season ticket holder at UVM. Oh, it's risky with the roads, he says. Good, responsible driving, especially for a high schooler. Good, responsible driving. Yeah, UVM. So some of you are listening to us on the way to UVM, so good luck to the Cats tonight. Greg Popovich has the key to being a good person. He has the key to being a great person. And this is amazing. For a guy who's in his 60s, for a guy who's won a bunch of championships, who's been involved with Olympic teams, I didn't know that he could find new ways to impress us, new ways to kind of shock. They always say you can't teach a new dog old tricks, or an old dog new tricks, but that's not the case with Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich has the key to being a good person, not just a good basketball coach. He's got the key to being a good person. Greg Popovich didn't think he used, well, I take that back. LaMarcus Aldridge is a center for the San Antonio Spurs, and he didn't really like the way he was being utilized in San Antonio. He wasn't playing all that well. He had career lows in playoff averages last year, 16.5 a game. He only had 4 points in game one of the Western Conference semis against the Rockets. He did not play well in the conference finals against the Warriors. He told Greg Popovich, I want to be traded. I don't fit in here. And Greg Popovich did something that not a lot of people are willing to do. He went to an uncomfortable place and he examined himself. And he said, why isn't LaMarcus Aldridge happy here? No player has ever asked me to be traded. Why isn't LaMarcus Aldridge happy here? And he said to himself, you know what? I'm overcoaching. I'm not utilizing him correctly. I'm not putting him in the best spots to be successful. I'm going to change that. And his reasoning was, LaMarcus Aldridge has been in this league for 9 years. He's not going to change. Well, Greg Popovich has been a head coach for 20 years, but he changed. And it's not easy when you've had success at anything to reflect and say, what am I doing wrong? You know, life is full of casting blame, right? We all want to blame everybody else for our problems. It would be very easy for Greg Popovich to say, LaMarcus Aldridge isn't the player he was. After his injuries, he's just not the same as he was in Portland. You know, we're done with him. He's never going to play the way that we want to. And if you can't fit in our box, then we're done with you. It's very easy to say that. And a lot of people would say, well, hey, if Greg Popovich says it, then it must be true. Greg Popovich did the uncomfortable thing. And he looked at himself. And after 20 years in this business and after a lot of championships, he's not afraid to say, what am I doing wrong? Why is this not working? Is it not working because of me? And I have a lot of respect for that, because oftentimes in coaching, it is just, well, look, we're all playing coaching for our jobs. Maybe Greg Popovich isn't, but we're all, you know, playing for our spot in this business. And it would be easy for Greg Popovich. That's why you see head coaches fire coordinators a lot. Okay? It's the coordinator's fault. Let's just blame him. It's not my fault. It's the coordinator's fault. Okay? General managers, they blame coaches. It's not the team that I assembled. You didn't manage it properly. Sports is all about blame. We all want to keep our spot in our standing, so who can we defer blame onto and they'll lose their job? Greg Popovich could have traded LaMarcus Aldridge. Could have cut LaMarcus Aldridge if he wanted to. Now, they would have been a cap hit and all that, so it wouldn't have been logical, but they could have said LaMarcus Aldridge is at fault for his poor play. But Greg Popovich said, I'm at fault for LaMarcus Aldridge's poor play. And I think that's pretty. I think that's pretty remarkable. I think it's pretty interesting. And a guy who, 20 years into the business, is willing to sit back, reflect, and say, "You know what? This isn't you, LaMarcus. This is me. I'm not doing a good enough job." And here's Aldridge this year, averaging 22.5 points a game, and having one. Actually, he's 22.5 points a game. He's averaging 27 this month. 27 points this month in five games in January. And Greg Popovich was willing to say, it's my fault. It's my fault you're not playing well. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. All right, Aaron, if you're on the wall there at the bottom, there's music, NFL primetime music. I think it's in orange. So if you've got that, let's get that music going. There you go. We're going to have to turn it down a little bit because it's going to get much louder in a second. There you go. NFL prediction time. We've got 5 minutes left. Time to go over our NFL games. Let's start. Let's just go in chronological order. Titans. Well, that's not chronological order, Brady. Atlanta at Philly. 4 o'clock, the pregame coverage for you here on 101.3 ESPN. Look, I like the Falcons. In the Super Bowl last year, what's not to like? They've got an aggressive defense, a lot of speed, Keanu Neal. They've got guys that can get after the quarterback. NFL sack leader last year, Vic Beasley, was on that defense. You've got Devondre Campbell in that linebacker core out of Minnesota. Phenomenal young player. You're healthier than you were last year in the playoffs because Desmond Trufant's there. Two running backs, MVP quarterback, best wide receiver in football potentially in Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, best 1-2 maybe in the league. I just don't see it. There's a ton to like about the Atlanta Falcons, but I just don't like it this week. I think they're better than the Eagles. I do. You play them on a neutral field, I think that with a Nick Foles-led Eagles team, I think the Falcons win handedly probably. But this isn't on a neutral site. This is in Philly. And you're coming off a 3,000-mile trip to Los Angeles where you did win a physical game and you did have to stop Todd Gurley. And now you're going up against the number one rush defense in the league. I think the Eagles are going to win this game. I don't think the Eagles get to the Super Bowl. I think the winner of Minnesota and New Orleans gets to the Super Bowl in the NFC. I do not think it's going to be the Eagles, but I think they win this week. I'll go, let's see here, what I got my final score as. I'll go Eagles 23, Falcons 16. I think the Eagles do just enough to muster one win for their fans and what's really going to be a tough one for Eagle fans, because this is the year with Carson Wentz where they're the number one seed. They should be going to the Super Bowl. They won't, but they'll win this one. 23-16 Eagles in a generally sloppy game, I think, by Atlanta. I think the Eagles do just enough. Let's move to the Patriots and Titans. I've said it all week. 23-6. I'll go with the Pats. I think they get up early. I think this is a clean game. I think this is a quick game because I think the air gets pulled out of the ball a lot. I think the Titans like to run it. I think that the Patriots are going to run it. Bad weather, cold weather, 23-6, Pats over the Titans. Moving on, AFC game on Sunday, 12:30. We'll have the coverage for you. Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. I don't know what to make of Pittsburgh right now. They're talking about all the wrong things. We're hearing about Mike Mitchell's comments about beating the Patriots in hell or in Haiti. We've got Le'Veon Bell saying he'll retire if he's franchise tagged. This is not a team that should be talking about things other than the Jacksonville Jaguars, who did beat them back in week 5. I think that Blake Bortles is over. It's hard to say he's overrated because I think everybody thinks he stinks, but I don't think he's as bad as everyone says he is. I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is at times. That defense is great. This is going to be an ugly, sloppy game. Steelers 16, Jaguars 13. I don't think that this game is high scoring. I like that Antonio Brown is back. I like Le'Veon Bell a lot. I don't think this team has great focus. I think the Steelers are overlooking Jacksonville, thinking about the Patriots. Again, ugly game, low scoring. Jags lose by 3 to the Steelers. This is going to be the game of the weekend, the final game. New Orleans at Minnesota. The number one ranked defense resides in Minnesota, but anytime the game is on turf, I instantly just assume it's going to be fast-paced and high-scoring. You think about teams that play on turf, Atlanta, Detroit. I think about teams that play fast, teams that get up and down, New Orleans. I shouldn't think this game is going to be so high-scoring, but I do. 27-20, I've got the Vikings winning this game. This game, with the number one defense, this game should be 20-10. It should be 20-17. I'll go 27-20. I think the Vikings do enough to win this game also. But nonetheless, we got 4 games this weekend. 3 of them, at least on paper, look to be pretty good. The dud appears to be the Titans and the Patriots. Come watch it with us, though, on Saturday night tomorrow, 8:15, over at McGillicuddy's Five Corners in Essex. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. Aaron, the music can be done. The predictions are done. Champlain Valley game night is just about done. So finish up my thought on that. McGillicuddy's Five Corners in Essex. Stay safe tonight. Good luck to the UVM men's hockey team this weekend. Good luck to UVM men's basketball. They're taking on Stony Brook tomorrow, 1:30. Sam Hyman will be on the call. Aaron, you have fun on Sports Saturday tomorrow, your first day as the official producer. Don't let Jeff and Bernie boss you around.
It's my show now.
It's your show now. Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul, Bernie Sablicki, and Aaron Wells. Know the name. He's the new producer. He'll be in there tomorrow as well. They'll get you ready for UVM and Stony Brook. Also, Patriots watch party, McGillicuddy's. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN.